You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's like
this is it. Episode number 222 of the Artificial Turf Wars, where we're going to pack 162 games of fun into just a 60-minute program. I am your host, Greg Wisniewski, and I am joined by the ever-present Joshua Howsam. Josh, how you doing?
Well, it's Tuesday now, so it's better than if we recorded this on Sunday.
It's good to have a little space. We had to delay the recording because of real life reasons. And that happens every once in a while. But here we are. We have arrived with many, many accomplishments of the 2021 Toronto Blue Jays. I think probably more accomplishments than I was expecting. So we're going to run those down for you, and then we're going to ask big, difficult questions, and then we're going to look at the future. And of course, we have your questions about the future, because there's a lot of that undiscovered country out in front of us. And then we do have a gold star. We have a gold star for the Blue Jays shortstop, Bo freaking Bichette, who I hope is here for a long, long time, because he seems like a great player and a fun guy. We shall begin with the highlights. I think this season had a lot of incredible numbers put up by the Blue Jays. We should start, I think, with the offensive side. As much as I love Vlad Jr., why don't we go with Marcus Semien? Because Marcus Semien has to be the best single season free agent contract the Blue Jays have ever signed, bar nothing.
Well, it's him or the pitcher we're going to talk about soon. But... two of them. But anyway, yeah, I mean, Semien, he did everything he could to drag the Blue Jays into contention and into the end of the season to try to get them into that last playoff spot. Just what a monster year he had. 45 home runs, 115 runs, 102 RBI, 15 stolen bases, 873 OPS overall. And he played fantastic defense at second base. The guy's going to be in the top three of MVP voting, and I can't really see an argument against it.
No, which is crazy, because he might not be ahead of ahead of another guy on the same team. Which is remarkable in and of itself. So the one I wanted to highlight there was those 45 home runs are in fact the most ever hit by a person playing more than, I believe it was, 50% of his games at second base.
Yeah, that's pretty darn good.
Just an all-time positional record there. No problem.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. You just did the best ever.
Oh, man. Now, they did ask Marcus Semien, you know, if he'd be interested in coming back. I believe it was Semien, and he was like, he listed off all the things going for the Blue Jays, basically. He said, I had great fun here, and who wouldn't want to be a part of that? I'm sure he wants to be a part of that for about $150 million, but... I mean, then George Springer and him would have something in common, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we'll get to the free agency stuff in a bit. He's earned a big payday with what he did and what he did in 2019 and what he did for the second half. The second month of 2020 in the postseason.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was questions, right? What is the real Semien? Because you go Semien's OPS by OPS plus from 2014 to 2018, it was in the mid to upper 90s. 2019, 139. 2020, 89. 2019 looked like the outlier.
Yeah.
2021, 133.
Yeah. So, and as a middle infielder, that's awesome. And I would say that it appears that Marcus Semien has, figured it out, whatever it is. So I would expect him to put up more years of that very definitely 100 plus OPS. How many more years? That's a question for a different day. He put up this year here in Toronto. He bet on himself and it paid off. And I congratulate him for obviously a lot of hard work that he put in to make that happen.
And one thing that we shouldn't be overlooked, he played every single game.
Oh, really? And I forgot.
Yeah, 162 games. And he started 162 games. He did not... it's like some guys, like, for example, last year, Vlad played all 60 games, but he had three games where he came in as a pinch hitter. That's not what happened here. Yep. And you can't really overstate how valuable that is, especially when he was the backup shortstop at the same time as being the star second baseman.
Yeah, it is tough to lay enough at Marcus Semien's feet at this point. So hopefully, the award voters recognize that, the Shohei Ohtani of the world notwithstanding. Let us move to the guy who might finish ahead of him in the MVP voting, and rightly so, 1,000 plus OPS, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who is the ripe old age of 22.
And I was wrong, actually. He finished one game. He came in the seventh inning.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. All the nice things and crazy things we said about Semien, he was not close to Vladimir Guerrero's offensive equal.
Yeah, the only reason we're discussing them in the MVP discussion is because Semien can play defensive second base very well, and Vlad is over there at first. Otherwise, this would be far and away Vlad's victory lap here. The 48 home runs he finished with?
Yep.
Which is, while we're going for all-time, the most home runs by any player 22 or in his age 22 season or younger. I believe Eddie Matthews was the one he passed to do that. So once again, if you look in the record books for young players and home runs, Vlad Jr. Will be there for the foreseeable future. Not that he had a lot of gaps in his game. He for the he got on base a lot. He hit for power all the time. He did not strike out much. Like, what else do you want out of your star first baseman?
You can't really think of anything. Randall Grichuk struck out more times in 150 fewer plate appearances. And Randall Grichuk doesn't strike out a crazy amount. He just strikes out enough. No, I mean, just like he run down the line again. He hit .311. 401 on base and a 601 slugging. That's a 1.002 OPS. 48 bombs, 111 driven in, 123 runs, 29 doubles. The doubles count is actually a little low because he hits the ball so hard that his liners off the fence turn into singles. But I think in order to really discuss how incredible this year was and how magical it was, you kind of have to put it in the context of what he had done in the big leagues to this point. Coming into this season, there was a lot of what is Vlad really going to be? Now, on this podcast, we kind of dismissed that talk because the guy was freaking 21. And he'd been an above average major league hitter at age 21. He was probably going to reach something like what we thought he was going to reach. I don't know that anybody thought he would do it right away.
Yeah, it was very much like a switch was flipped. And I think that does have to do with his conditioning. I think coming into the season in better shape, ready to go, and having lost all of that weight that he was carrying around and was, you know, slowing him down, not just in his running, but slowing him down, I think, from, you know, place to place, I think made a huge difference. And I think seeing that difference in results is going to probably keep him motivated to stay in that kind of condition.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, you can't, it can't not do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he even said right away at the beginning of the season that his felt his hands got through the zone quicker. And Vlad has some of the fastest hands in the game. When they're getting through quicker, you know it's going to be dangerous for opposing pitchers, and it showed up with the numbers. He led the major leagues in home runs, tied with Salvador Perez, and he led the major leagues in runs. He just didn't win the Triple Crown because there were other people who had really good seasons, but these are all numbers that could have led the league in their categories.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you take Semien and Vlad Jr. together, they become only the sixth pair of teammates, you said, to hit 45 or more home runs each in the same together in the same season.
Yep. It's not a common feat.
No.
And it was it was pulled off by these two guys. And if you had said that it was going to be any two Blue Jays, you'd probably said, oh, it's Vlad and Teoscar or something like that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Nope. And the second baseman, which, of course, those two guys lead this team forward into hitting more home runs than any Blue Jays team has ever hit, which I believe it was Danny Jansen's home run that broke the record the day before the end of the season. And since they were facing Baltimore, they just kept raining home runs down the following day. So, yeah, another team record, another one for the books. All of those records lead to a lot of runs driven in. How many 100 RBI play? Not that I love RBIs, but how many 100 RBI hitters did the Blue Jays have?
Four hundred.
I bet you there are times when the Blue Jays struggled to score 500 runs,
and they also had two more guys who had 80. This was just a dynamite offense when it was rolling. And by the way, none of these players was George Springer.
Yeah. George Springer didn't stay on the field long enough to be any of these guys. Though when he was on the field, he was on pace. Like, he kept pace with all of these numbers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if he'd played 160 games, you're looking at a pace that would lead to 40 home runs, 100 RBI. He'd be right there with those other guys. And the fact that they did this well with him playing 78 games, it just shows that the depth and prowess of this lineup, that, you know, and how tough it would have been to face them at any time.
And then, just because we've talked about the offense enough, I think, if I missed an offensive accomplishment?
There's one.
Okay.
This is like really hashtag baseball stats, but there has only been one other team in history that had two players hit 40 home runs, one player hit 30, and another four of them hit 20. So there was the 2021 Blue Jays and the 2000 Blue Jays. They're the only teams in baseball history to have done that.
I do kind of like our home ballpark, even though they didn't play in that ballpark all year. I feel like that's a factor. So then we flip to the pitching side of the ball, which, shockingly, the Blue Jays ended up with a guy, presumptively the Cy Young winner, who is not named Hyunjin Ryu.
I mean, if we can get to Ryu in a bit, but who? So before the season, you could go back and listen to our podcasts from the winter. I was very bullish on Robbie Ray. I thought he was a very good signing because he had been successful in the major leagues before. I thought that he, for what he was going to provide positive value. I wasn't even close to expecting what he actually gave the Blue Jays.
Well, we talked about the most important player on this team at the beginning of the season, and we both agreed that Hyunjin Ryu had to be the guy you needed to talk about to come through for them. And it turned out we were also way off base with that, because the guy you needed every day, every 5 days out there, was Robbie, man, those pants are tight, Ray, and his absolute turnaround in in walking, or rather not walking people anymore. And also not being particularly susceptible to the home run in the second half right up until that last game.
Yeah, we'll get to that one in a bit. But... so Robbie Ray set career highs in games started. He tied that. He'd done that before once. ERA, career low, technically. Innings pitched, strikeouts, walk rate, and whip.
So everything.
He led the league in ERA, starts, innings pitched, strikeouts, and whip. If you were going to say Robbie Ray was going to lead the league in any of those, it would be strikeouts. And that's the only one you would ever predict. And even then, because his career high in innings was 174, you still wouldn't think it would lead the league. But he just took the ball every single day. And because he cut his walk rate from what to that point in his career had been what you would call bad. It was 4.3 per nine.
Yep.
He cut that all the way down to 2.4, which allowed him to get deep in games and reach the rest of these milestones.
Yeah, it was the perfect kind of improvement from, again, we go back to this, a one-year contract.
For $8 million.
I feel like I would like to take up a collection for Robbie Ray.
Well, I think he's going to make up for it.
Yeah, we got to talk about that in a couple of minutes. Are there any other accomplishments to highlight, though, in this season?
I think that there's a couple that are less heralded. Santiago Espinal hit .311 with a .376 on base and the .405 slugging because he has no power, but that's tremendous considering how solid he is defensively and really where the Jays were with that third base position. I just think that in this podcast where we're not going to go in depth on every single player because we have, you know, our next one next week where we go through all the awards and all that, or in 2 weeks, whenever we do that. I just wanted to highlight him now because he was so good down the stretch, and it's a shame that he got hurt in the early part of September, because he really might have made a difference over playing Breivik Valera and Jake Lamb.
Yeah, and you have to remember that when you look up and down the Blue Jays lineup and you see a bunch of guys almost hitting 300, that's a huge outlier in this league. This league hits around like 250. So 311 from Espinal is amazing. As is the .376 on base percentage. The other fun fact that's not a record, well, I heard it described as a record, but fun fact, the Blue Jays did not have a losing month. So when we are about to point fingers, which I think we are about to point fingers, at how they ended up the subject of a retrospective before we played any playoff games, the lack of a losing month. Maybe I should not jump too far ahead of that. Alek Manoah. He's so big and we almost forgot him.
You know, you mentioned that Ryu thing, right? And the importance of Hyunjin Ryu. That was because going into the season, the rotation was Ryu, Ray, Matt Stripling, and Tanner Roark.
Yeah.
And there's this idea that, like, if the Jays were going to get things done, Ryu was going to have to throw 200 innings of 2.5 ERA ball. And, you know, Ray basically did that. But part of the reason that Ryu still didn't have to do it was that Mats was good, but that they called up Alek Manoah in May, and he was great.
Yeah. Consistently great when he wasn't getting thrown out of games.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't doing great that well in that game anyway. So... yeah, but I mean, his final line, 127 strikeouts in 111 innings across 20 starts and a 3.22 ERA. I mean, that's really, really quite good. Even for a non-rookie, those are really good numbers. But for the first time through pitching in the AL East,
he had 35 professional innings under his belt prior to this season.
Yeah.
It's a ridiculous number. To show up and post a sub 3.5 ERA in the AL East. Just ridiculous.
And to be a guy that you wanted taking the ball. every time down the stretch. He had that one stinker against Oakland where the Jays, that's the one where the Jays came back with the grand slam by Gurriel and the walk-off by Semien. But from the middle of August to the end, that was the only time he gave up more than three runs, and he only gave up three runs once against the Yankees. So he just stepped up and really carried them towards the end.
Yeah.
Here's the fun one. The Jays only lost four times in his 20 starts.
That's why I was so chill whenever he took them out. That's a Manoah start. It'll probably work out. Even if it doesn't work out for him specifically, I just feel like it'll probably work out. Was he the starter in that game where they scored a billion runs in the seventh?
In the seventh?
Against
Baltimore?
Yeah, against Baltimore.
No.
Okay. That would have been hilarious.
No, he didn't pitch in that series. That was Ryu, I think, actually.
Okay.
Oh, no, it was Thomas Hatch. Thomas Hatch started that game.
Yes, the Blue Jays did not have a losing month in this season. And I always find it funny because it's an easy thing to do when you do a postmortem to point to the losing month and go, oh, what went wrong in the June swoon or whatever else. You cannot do that with this Blue Jays team. We are going to have to point fingers somewhere else. And fingers we shall point, because the Blue Jays won 91 games, were up a game in the wild card standings with a week to go, and are on the outside looking in. What happened, Josh?
Good question. Well, part of it, I think, is the Tampa Bay Rays happened. And the Rays attacked the Blue Jays differently than every other pitching staff in the league. The Jays are a fastball hunting, first pitch swinging team. The Rays, to exploit that, throw them a whole bunch of first pitch fastballs that are not in the strike zone or just on the edges of the strike zone. And so they get these first pitch outs, second pitch outs that normally they would not. And I think that messed them up for the next couple series. And that happened, and they didn't really do damage against the Minnesota Twins and then the New York Yankees in the last two series heading into that Baltimore one. And by that point, it ended up, it turns out it was over.
Yeah. I think it's very much, it is a symptom of what happened earlier in the season, that things were so close in the first place, right? That they had a bullpen that spent a good month not being able to hold leads. But once you have your destiny in your hands, if we can win these games against Minnesota, a losing team, and against New York, a team we've already beat more often than we've lost to them, and Baltimore, a team we should sweep, if we can do all of that, I think you have to lay it at the feet of the Blue Jays for, you know, not being able to find a way. At the same time, the Yankees are the Yankees and are not going to get swept without ever holding a lead two series in a row, I don't think.
No. I don't think that'd be a lot to ask. Winning the series against the Yankees, though, I mean, look, the Yankees are a great team. They're not a flawless team, but they're a very good team. But you have to beat them. If you want to get in over them in the postseason, you got to beat them to get in. And they had done it earlier in the season, but they didn't do it then when it counted the most. And this is the Robbie Ray thing that you alluded to in the first bit, that he was just absolutely dominating for five innings. And then he completely fell apart in the sixth. He gave up three bombs and a walk. And that sunk the Blue Jays season. And now I think that the last one was, I can't believe he was allowed to pitch to Gleyber Torres, considering he'd given up two home runs and a walk already. But, you know, that was a game they had to win and they did not. But
I think it's interesting that we talked about that first game as a coin flip with Taillon and I believe Ryu starting. And that coin flip went the Yankees way. And then the other two games ended the opposite way of what we had predicted, because Cole gave up five runs in about five innings and Robbie Ray gave up about five runs in six innings, like five plus. And it was like, oh, neither team counted on its Cy Young candidate ace at that moment when it most counted. The irony of that stands out to me.
Yeah. No, it was really silly. Now, they still had a shot. All they needed was for Washington to win a game. against the Red Sox. And Washington was leading in the seventh in two of the three games.
Yep.
Did not help.
Nope.
No. But as you alluded to a minute ago as well, to really lay the blame, I mean, again, they won 91 games, right? That's still fantastic. But
yes.
To lay the blame at them not making the postseason, it really goes back to, as you mentioned, those early games where they blew those leads. They had that one series against New York in New York where they held the lead in the seventh in every game of the series and lost every game.
And I believe they also swept by Tampa on their way out of Dunedin?
Four-game sweep where the Rays scored the go-ahead run or the winning run in the seventh inning or later in each game.
So that's eight game.
Seven.
Seven games. A three-gamer and a four-gamer. I'm only asking you to win two of those. Right? As a fan, I'm asking for two back. And the Blue Jays are in the playoffs right now in the wild card game.
Yep. And then that first game against the Mets, too, where they were winning 3-1, I think it was, and then Brucky gave up a two-run homer, and then Barnes gave up two runs, and yeah, but the fact that Jacob Barnes was pitching in leverage tells you all that you need to know about the state of the bullpen in the middle of the season. They really righted the ship by getting Simber and Meza and by getting Berríos because Berríos took a lot of pressure off the fifth and sixth innings of the bullpen because he was going 6-7 every single time. But
yeah,
that was the Achilles heel of this team. The offense disappeared at times, but that's just going to happen to every team. And look at the Yankees. Their offense was nowhere for most of September. But the bullpen was bad. And the offense didn't dominate the way it could at times, too. James G., who we reference all the time on this, he just should just be like officially listed on our podcast Twitter page. he put out a tweet.
We'll put him in for half salary, which, well, you know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if he'd stay on very long.
Our salary of zero? Yes. That. So he put out a stat that looked at all of the seventh inning or laters. The biggest ones that the Jays got killed on was actually when they enter the seventh inning tied, which was a combination of the offense not burying teams late or doing enough to get over the hump, and then the bullpen being bad because the Jays were not very good in the late innings on offense.
Yeah, I mean, and again, they course corrected, but they course corrected later in the season where things seem to be, not that they got good at it, but they seem to be doing average, you know, in those last three innings in August and September. I think the next question is, do we quickly look ahead? Not that we have the ability to predict the future here, but I think we should highlight just what needs to happen to keep this team in some kind of shape for 2022, if indeed there is a season in 2022.
I just wanted to quickly give you the stat that I was talking about. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
When they were tied going in the seventh inning, Boston had a 667 winning percentage. The Yankees, 621. MLB as a whole, obviously 500.
Good.
The Blue Jays, yeah. The Blue Jays, 409.
Yeah,
that was the difference.
Just a couple games. A couple games. So I don't want to go on at great length about this because we've gone on a great length already about things. But essentially, we said Semien and Ray 1 year contracts. Steven Matz is also a pending free agent. But there's also some free agents on the market, and the Blue Jays don't have an everyday third baseman. So there's a lot of moving parts potentially. Coming in and those ones going out. How do you think the front office approaches this offseason?
It's an excellent question because obviously they're going to want to keep Ray and going to want to keep Semien, but they also want to extend Berríos and they want to probably extend Teoscar and they probably want to extend Bo and Vlad. And you can't do all those things. I mean, sure, the Dodgers maybe could do all those things, but you can't really give Semien and Ray and Teoscar and Vlad and Bo gigantic long-term deals because eventually you just don't have enough money. Now, look, I know owners always have enough money, but that's just not how it works. So they're going to really have to prioritize some of those things, and I don't know how they're going to want to lay that out.
No, I mean, you have to field a roster that is hunting for the division again, right? This is this that you are so far away from the rebuild thoughts that you got to spend some money, a lot of money, I would say. I mean, this front office is going to spend a whole bunch of money. Yep. The question is, how much return on investment are they going to get? Because the following year, they're going to start to have trouble finding money to spend because they've gone from a, you know, I don't know what the actual payroll was this year. Do you have that off the top of your head?
It started at $135 billion. It went up a bit to about 140 something, 145 during the season.
Right. Presumably, this team is going to hit the $180 to $200 million range while they hunt for the playoffs. But all of Bo Bichette, Alek Manoah, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Danny Jansen, and Kevin Biggio, all these guys are dirt cheap right now. And they're not going to be dirt cheap when arbitration and contract extension time comes up. So you kind of got to reserve some of that money.
I think this is where a lot of the Jose Ramirez talk comes from. I mean, look, there's been a lot of stories out there that the Jays were very close to getting Ramirez at the deadline. It's come from multiple sources. He makes $12 million next year, $16 million the year after that. That's where that kind of talk comes from, because you can get a star player who doesn't destroy your future payroll. So, look, whether it's Jose Ramirez, whether it's Matt Chapman or Byron Buxton or whoever, they might have to get creative on the trade front to keep the talent level where it was, but not destroy their future budget, as you talked about, because those guys are going to start getting really, really expensive.
Yeah, and nothing hurts more than watching homegrown players walk away at 6 years, 7 years, 6 years, 7 years, because they can declare free agency and the team doesn't have anything but to beg for a hometown discount.
Yep.
All right, we're going to leave it there. We're going to come back in a couple of minutes for you guys. It's going to be a whole lot less than that. We're going to come back with your questions and such. You want me? I want you, baby. We've returned through the magic of podcasting. We have the most important segment of any year-end podcast, the feels bad man section of questions, which we shall introduce with our usual stinger.
Time now to hear from our listeners.
That just seems silly.
Here are the rules. First, I ask a question, then you ask a question.
Now, how does that sound, sweetheart?
Could you repeat the question, please?
I feel like we don't follow that we each ask a question rule very often, but we quote it anyway.
Whatever.
The first question comes from Andrew Arnold, and it is only one question for Andrew. For this broken-hearted fan, can I have a hug?
Not too COVID safe, but sure, why not?
Yeah, I think we can make an exception here. I think vaccinations and the extreme circumstances, yes, you can have a hug, absolutely. Come down to the studio and pick up your hug. It will be boxed with love in the front hall for you. Moving to our second question. You know what? You ask me the Kevin Chase question.
Should we do this the way today? Do it the way that our seniors are? Okay.
Correctly.
Kevin, not Kevin Chase 4. Why did the Yankees and Red Sox both choose to win in dramatic comeback fashion? They built up my postseason dreams just to mercilessly crush my spirit with a gif from the football player. They had us in the first half, not going to lie.
I think it's more, why did the Nationals and Rays not hold up their end of the bargain and keep the lead? I think that's also a valid question.
The Rays never actually led. It was 0-0.
But because baseball, I think I've learned over the years as a Blue Jays fan that the Red Sox and the Yankees have just a little pocket full of magic pixie dust that was never handed out to any of the expansion franchises.
It sure seems that way.
Don't know why, but that's how it works. Brian Donnelly at Brian Donnelly 8 asks, looking back at the roller coaster of expectations over the last 2 months, would you call this season a success? Also, which Jay brought you the most joy this year?
Would I call it a success? I mean, no, right? It was a very good season for the team, but a success, they did not make it. So it was mostly a success. Like, they did a really good job. They won 91 games, but I can't go back on what I said a week ago.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. The irony of that would be too much for me. Yeah.
As for which Jay brought me the most joy, Vlad, definitely Vlad.
I love Vlad. In the middle of the season, I thought, oh, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. But then it got more difficult. George Springer shows up, and it turns out George Springer just dances in the dugout randomly. I'm like,
what? Yeah, if he'd played a full season, I think it might have been Springer.
And then I find out Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is coming back to the dugout after hitting a grand slam going, man, that's all I got. I got nothing else. That moment was great.
The whole team.
Yeah, it's tough, man. I'll be honest. The home run jacket as a celebration, which gave everybody a chance to, you know, throw the jacket on, flex a little bit, throw it around, but sort of formalize that. I think that made this whole team seem so much fun. And then when the starters got the jacket for throwing an absolute, ace type outing, that was fantastic. I think
that first time. When Alec Manoah brought it out and stuck it on Robbie Ray, she's like, "Oh, here we go." I just gotta love this team.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's why it hurts a little bit more. They weren't out to hurt anybody. This just hurt baseballs. That's all they were out to hurt.
And it's just, you got the feeling too. This is why it's not a success in that sense. Like, you got the feeling that if they made it in, they were going to be tough to play against.
Yeah, yeah. But we have a question about that.
But, so, yep.
Fire me the questions from Al.
Yep. It's really one question. Cynicism warning. And this is, we didn't talk about this in the first part for this reason, because we saw this question. If the Blue Jays couldn't even make the wild card with two MVP candidates, a Cy Young frontrunner, a closer with a 2.05 ERA plus, franchise record in home runs, the second highest team WAR in baseball, and the fifth highest run differential, what hope is there of doing even better next year? That is, aren't they due for some serious regression?
And I get that cynicism, and I think absolutely there are aspects of this team that are due for some regression. The one counterpoint I would make as far as players who are already on the roster. Two counterpoints. Jose Berríos, full season, who apparently is, you know, good. And George Springer only played 78 games. So you can pick up a little bit of slack in those two spots. But more to the point, this is the only time in history of this type of divisional play where four teams in one division have won 91 games. You don't need to be better than this year. You just need to be very good again.
And I'm going to take it a step further. The Jays can be worse than this year and have better results. You talked about regression. The biggest way to do better is to have serious regression in your luck and in your, you know, in your close game performance. We talked about this. The Jays were randomly bad in late innings, and their bullpen was, you know, really terrible at the beginning. Just win a few more of those games that you should win. Like, the Jays expected win-loss record was 99 wins. Now, that stat is a little suspect, but it makes the point that the Jays can offensively and even pitching-wise perform a little worse, but the team can absolutely win more games.
There's hope for you. Gabriel Byatt, at Gabriel Byatt. I just mean it's all packaged up nicely there. I believe Gabriel may be the first-time question asker. So if so, welcome to Artificial Turf Wars. How should we feel about the Nationals subbing regulars out in the last plays of the game? And whither Riley Adams?
Well, there's two ways to look at this. There's the that we wanted the Nationals to give everything they had to really take out the Red Sox. But they're also had to look at their own players too and give some guys a chance to do something. And yeah, so Riley Adams sucked and it didn't help the Blue Jays, but I don't know. It's just, you just have to, you can't really count on other teams to do things that you want them to do. You have to, you know, that's why when you control your own destiny, you got to take advantage of that. And the Jays didn't.
Yeah. And I do not fault Ryan Zimmerman being put out to get a curtain call.
Absolutely not.
An entire season, an entire career as a National. Right. And I just, they were a 96 loss team who had a very crappy year. I don't think that they should bear any burden of responsibility for getting the Blue Jays into the playoff. Personally. Yeah, hit me with one.
Turf Ferguson at Turfurg. Well, he's changed his name. So three questions. Okay. Are you comfortable with Espinal at third base if it means you can keep either Ray or Semien?
I would be comfortable if we keep both.
Yeah, to me, it's not an either, and I'm still not comfortable with Espinal as the third baseman. You got to get a real third baseman. Two, if the Nats win, does this team make it past the race to the ALCS?
Maybe, but we've highlighted the problems with the Blue Jays offense versus the Rays pitching strategy very recently. I think about, 15 minutes ago.
Maybe. Yeah, and also, they would have had to win against Boston or New York, and then win again against the other one, and then go into Tampa. It would have been really hard. The Jays have the talent to do it, but you can't assume that they would have. Last one. Who do we come out of game 162 hitting the most? Boston, Washington, New York, or Tampa? The Nats are taking undue flack for Tampa, right?
Probably, but I would say, personally, I hate Tampa. Because Tampa, in addition to being the thorn in the Blue Jays' side, even when they were bad, is also, to me, symbolic of everything wrong with cheap baseball owners in this league, and they continue to win. And I hate it.
Yep, let's leave it there. I'm not even going to answer. Go ahead.
Ian Scrimger at Scrimisms. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Do you think the home run jacket will be back next year, or was it a 2021 Blue Jays thing? I'll miss it if it's gone.
I don't think it's back.
No, I don't either. I think there's an evolution of something. Yeah, I think there's absolutely, from day one, some kind of home run celebration. And it's not just a handshake or whatever. But yeah, much like Edwin's parrot, some things come and go. But teams don't like to carry these things from season to season, do they?
No. From Brian A. at BJ Arsenal 84. Say we keep this exact team next year. What's the outcome?
Does he mean the exact team that we ended the season with?
Yes, the current roster as of game 162.
I think that team wins 95 games.
I think they win 100.
Yeah. Because there's nobody who's, you're a year older and you're going to start sliding off on this roster, except for maybe George Springer and Hyunjin Ryu.
Yep. And then you get a full healthy year, Nate Pearson, you get
Alec Manoah for 30 starts, maybe, right, exactly. Not 20. Yeah. On and on it goes. Yeah. Yeah. The if you could keep everything, if you could keep all the marbles, this would be a team that everybody would be. They were all scared of this team in the first place. If you listen to other fan bases. Who asked the last question? You asked
Brian's
question?
It's Will's question now.
Will.
I asked it, yeah.
At Will double _ Brom. What? There's a lot of people I don't recognize these names. Also, I think that's an NHL 94 graphic for his Twitter avatar, which is amazing. What are some areas of improvement that the Jays should address this offseason in order to balance out likely regression from some spots in the rotation and lineup? Well, go ahead.
Pretty simple. They need another starter. They need another good reliever. And then they need a third baseman, preferably one who can bat left-handed and take some walks.
And I guess a second baseman.
Yeah, well, and replacing Ray and Semien, whether with them or with someone else. So their needs are really obvious. It's just whether they can do it or not. The last one from Colleen Evans at Colleen Evans 6. With all this talk about how Alex Cora is a big reason for the Red Sox winning, why or how are the White Sox being so successful with Tony La Russa?
because all of this stuff about Alex Cora being responsible for the Red Sox winning is a load of fertilizer.
And also, the White Sox are playing in the AL Central.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's like somebody turned the settings down to easy.
It sure is. Yeah, the White Sox are a good team, but that division is so bad.
Oh, man. Inflated win total Central. That's what we call that for the one good team in that division every year, which whoever they might be. Wow, that was a lot of questions. So thank you, everybody. We look forward to more in the off season, but it was a great season of questions. I really enjoy some of the stuff that you make us pick our brains for, and some of the silly things that you get us to answer as well. Always a good time. Which means that we move on to, I believe, the final gold star of the 2021 season. Are you ready for said gold star?
Hit me.
I think that's rather brilliant.
So I did good, right?
I mean, I would have thought you'd get a gold star.
You enjoy that. You've earned it.
They say you should not go up trying to hit a home run. Who are they, Josh?
People who are wrong.
In a moment of extreme honesty and candor, Bo Bichette was asked, now which game was this? Clarify for me.
This was the second game of that Yankees series, the one where Garrett Cole gave up five, but then the Jays blew the lead and it was 5-5.
Very bad. But
and so Bo Bichette came up against Clay Holmes, the Yankees' best reliever, in the eighth or the bottom of the seventh. I can't remember.
And he hit a home run. That's amazing. I believe it was bottom of the eighth. He hit a home run. He literally put the game in the Blue Jays' hands. And then they asked him post-game, were you trying to hit a home run there? And he said, yes. I'm not going to lie. I was trying to hit a home run.
Yeah. And he said, he was like, lucky I got it.
Yeah. It's a lot more, awkward post-game conversation. Do you admit
it?
If you
pops up a second.
Yeah. Do you admit it? Yeah. Were you trying to hit a home run there? Oh, yeah. Did you? No.
No, but it's funny. If you think about it, if you are a good enough hitter, which he is, and you know what the pitcher's going to throw, and he said this, like, I knew what he was going to throw, and I knew the kind of swing I needed to put on it to hit it out of the park. And he did. That's just really cool. I love that stuff. It's the Matt Stair school of baseball.
A case of emergency. I believe it was, I was watching an interview with Reggie Jackson one time. He was talking about the World Series where he hit the three home runs and got that was, you know, coined as Mr. October. And he went on to tell a story that the first plate appearance of the following season, he also hit a home run. So he hit like four home runs and four plate appearances. And he said, don't ever tell a kid that you can go up there looking to hit a home run. But you can go up there looking at home, trying to hit a home run.
Yep.
So to you, one gold star, Mr. Bichette. I am sorry that it is not a playoff appearance, but it is all we have in the drawer here. Yep. And with that, in a very, very amazing way, I have come to the final thought for you for the 2021 season.
I'm going to do two just because it's the last one. My final thoughts. The first one's really silly that I ran into Nate Pearson at Pearson Airport, which is very funny. But I felt really bad for him because it was 8:30 in the morning and he's flying to Detroit. It's like, oh, man, your season ended yesterday and you have to be at Pearson at 8:30 to go to Detroit. I don't know where he was transferring to from there, but I just felt bad for him. He was on my plane.
No charter for you, Mr. Pearson.
Yeah. You're not taking a private flight to Boston or New York. You're taking a regular flight to Detroit, and you're not even flying direct to wherever you're going. But anyway, my actual final thought, like I said, it wasn't a success, but it was actually a really fun team to follow. I loved it. I loved the way that they played in September to really get themselves back in the race, and the way they pounded the Orioles in that final series. It was just a lot of fun to watch. And it showed how scary they were, that the Yankees had the choice. If there was a three-way tie, whether they would play the Yankees, the Blue Jays, or the Red Sox, and they chose Boston.
Hmm. And probably not for the rating.
No, they were afraid of playing the Blue Jays because the Blue Jays were a scary, fantastic team and wasn't a success, but it was amazing and I loved it. That's my final thought.
I do love Blue Jays offensives that happen. It seems every like 8 to 10 years, they have an offense that rains baseballs upon the opposition endlessly. And even if everything else doesn't work out, it is always fun to watch.
Yep.
I think my final thought is this was a really, it was a crazy season. And I think it's been a while since I felt as a fan like it was really crazy enough to pay attention to from start to finish. Like I didn't feel like there was 2 weeks where I could just check out and come back and see what had happened, because there was something going on with this team. And I like that. I like having a team that competes every day, a team that has something on the line. And I'm really hoping, to be honest, I am hoping that there's a 2022 baseball season that's full length and has the same kind of things in it. Because this could all go belly up when they attempt to renegotiate the CBA in the coming months.
Hey, sorry, I hate to talk over your final thought, but
no,
Semien addressed this. Yeah, Semien did at least talk about this, because he's the player rep. He's on the subcommittee of whatever. And that they're aware that it's like they just missed a whole whack of a season. They don't want to do that again.
So yeah, at least, but I don't want the players to get screwed, right?
No, right. But at least there's a desire, probably from both sides, to not miss games again.
Indeed. Well, that is to say that I have been Greg Wisniewski at Coolhead 2010, and you have been Joshua Howsam at Joshua Howsam. I would like to extend a big thanks to all of our guests and our patrons for sticking with us for another season of Artificial Turf Wars. And as we enter the off season, we will talk at you in a couple of weeks.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, I wonder this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's gone to stay. Ain't no sunshine.